Finally, I'd like to turn it over to Jeremy. To Jeremy Johns, who has to switch his computer out. In the meantime, if you want to just look behind you at that sheet of paper that's on that tablet and note that there are three empty spaces which could be filled by you. Are there questions?
I was just curious about the approximate cost that you spent to get one of these labs up and running. And I'm sure it could go as high as you want it to go, but if there's an average in terms of what you're each been spending to create one of these labs, that would be useful to know.
The actual Fred units themselves, there's a fair bit of difference depending on what you want. I guess they're about, just to give you a rough sense, you're looking at probably about $6,000. The software licenses can be quite expensive if you decide to go for FDK or in case, 3K, depending on what you go for. We probably spent about $25,000 to outfit our lab to start with. I would probably make different decisions now, learning what I've learned, and maybe Susan has some thoughts on that as well.
I think we probably spent slightly less than that, but the other aspect I think that needs to be considered is the cost of training. I don't know how much you spent on training, but in addition to the license fees for the proprietary forensic software, the training costs.
So I asked this question on Twitter, but I'd like to hear it spoken as well. So FDK is a closed source program, and I just wonder what that means for the guarantee of authenticity, where you don't know exactly what it's doing. I mean, you can have some trust in the software, but you can't be guaranteed that it's doing what you think it's doing, and how you kind of get around that problem.
The approach that we've adopted, I don't know if you're doing it centrally, but you're doing multiple images and comparing, or just
we actually haven't, we've just been using the one. That's actually a really good point. We haven't really fixated on one particular imaging program at this point, just because we've been playing with the different type of outputs and things, but it's a good point that you can't actually see the code that's operating behind there, but it's good to know.
We certainly like to use the open source options. I think one of the reasons we haven't is this wants to involve the cataloging office in the sort of appraisal and the processing material and wanting to make it reasonable for them and be able to use the material that's user friendly, and we found that the open source options don't give us that yet. And it would be nice to develop something for us as a community that perhaps doesn't use the criminal language.
So I think that we have our last presentation ready, so we'll move to questions after Jeremy Johns.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for inviting me here. It's getting to be quite a familiar community, I think. So, I thought I'd just update some of the things that we're doing after the charter. I've started to explore what I've called virtual archive and computing as far as the name on virtual forensic computing. One classic way of looking at the contents of a system or hardware is to restore it and then using familiar, the same old equipment, and of course the trouble with that is that as you use it, you're changing all the files, and it's also very old to find suitable hardware. So one possible solution to that is called Shadow Drive, which is produced by a company in Google. Effectively what it does is allows you to use the system. It acts like a rapid operator. It stops you from writing to the hard drive, but it monitors what you're doing, and you can look at and explore the system in the way that the original writer or scientist did. But there is in many ways a better solution, which is to use the virtual approach, which is to take the original forensic image created and represent everything on the hard drive. Some years ago, Enphase produced physical disk emulator, which allowed you to filter, sorry, to mount the disk and to explore. And under some circumstances, you can actually put that forensic image and use it then as if it was a normal computer system. To do that, the hardware has to behave appropriately, and that is not easily done. But now there's software out which is very helpful for people, architects now who are having quite a lot of training around it. And the approach I adopted is use Mount Image Pro, which is very comfortable, and that mounts all kinds of forensic images, classic DD, but also can mount proprietary Enphase forensic image, and it can also, I believe, or not quite, right, mount Simpson's AFF file. And having mounted it, you then need really a virtual machine that will behave like the original hardware from which it came. And forensic scientists have done that by hand, if you like, that they've tinkered with the software, the virtual software, in order to do that. But a company called ND5 uses virtual computing software, which does a lot of that for you. And there's an open source equivalent called Latitude. So the original handout is on the top left, and going to mount the proprietary enclosed image, which is on the top left, and then get those shows that have mounted them here. And then I go to the virtual forensic computing software, and you can then ask it to, and you can tell it, it has a user VMware. Looks at the forensic image and determines what, at least some of what it needs to do in order for a VMware virtual machine to behave appropriately. So you then you're now going to, the process of doing that is to you tell it what you want it to look at, it's that usual tradition. You then ask it to generate the virtual machine. And having created the virtual machine, you can then save it and start it up. And it'll open up in VMware. And this was from a hard drive of Maynard Smith. And it comes up first at the top picture. And I knew immediately I saw that, but it was working because the Biglin image thing was something that was very specific to that particular computer. And then it comes up on the left, and then to the icon and does it on the right. And then I just touch the zoom up and everything. Acrobat. And one of the reasons for doing this is that you do, as other people have mentioned, including Julian Emery, you really get a feel for what it is like to use that computer. When you boot it up, you have to use what's called VMware tools within the system, and that increases the accuracy of the resolution. And yet, I have this quite big, the icons are quite big, and the format is quite big, and I'm a little bit puzzled. I think it has to all work perfectly. You know, it does say it in the center. A couple of days later, I was speaking to a scientific colleague, and she mentioned that Maynard Smith, near the end of his life, his eyesight had diminished. So I think that's something we probably wouldn't easily recognize when we direct forensic approach in a normal community. And then you can shut down and adjust down normally. And the reason why we're in a sense justified the calling this forensic approach is that even though you're changing the system, it's repeatable. You can repeat the approach. And you can take snapshots, and you can return back to the system. I'll then turn to Ben Hamilton's evolution of Bowser's collection that started at Lambert, really. And, of course, VMware and VFC and then Apple. So, I had to look them up. And I found an emulator called SheepShaver. It's fully open source, just created by enthusiasts. And unfortunately, because of, I can't show it to you unless you throwing a bellboy on a lamp. But I did, knowing that technology was there, but I did do a screenshot and see if we can have them. Again, you might not predict the nature of the, easily the nature of the or fear or the nature of the desktop images. One nice thing about this particular system is that it cycles every time you boot it up, you get a different picture. I had like tweaked a bit as a sort of limited ability to do some of the tweaking that's necessary, and one of them is that I artificially increased the RAM, and that allowed me to open Photoshop. And one of the things that most pleased me is that I opened the Code Warrior software in which you did a lot of this modeling of prototypes and previews and cycling. And to do, I mean, look at my computer, see the cycling happening according to color. So that's my dabbling in virtual iPad computing. And the other thing I've thought a bit more about is creation of the network that came out of the digital labs project. I'm sure we're all conscious that there are more things happening on the internet. We're recognizing readily that the readers want to have access. But I think what hasn't been discussed a lot is that it's not just the readers, the scholars who want internet access. And the curators should also be working more and more online. And it particularly struck me when I did a few trips across Britain just to go and do some site visits, look at some digital material, that really we should save on the travel budget and acquiring a lot of this stuff remotely. And it also allows the potential advice to integrate our files across. And I don't know how much you know about planets. It's a digital preservation program in Europe. And those are online services for testing file formats, for conversions, and for remote emulation. But I think they're focused very much on digital preservation, and I think there are also archival tools like cataloging tools, interviewing. There's a lot of things that curators and actors could be doing, and which require tools which are not used by the digital preservation community, but which could be shared and tested as a community. Similarly, have test bed and register tools that we use. I recently did a course. We don't have software, and I'm not really sure we have a real. But I did a course on the field intelligence model in place for that. Primarily, because one of the benefits of doing the software is the insights and possible solutions and ideas. And also, it's not only, as someone said, about data recovery, it's about authenticity and demonstrating that you're behaving appropriately, doing the right thing, and recording that. And so, we had thought we could just go to someone's, a writer's computer remotely, and they switch on the computer, they could tell us their password, and we could acquire some files. But really what's needed is a procedure that monitors all that and records it, and it's accountable and allows creators to say this is what we did, and the permission. because I think that's where this is really useful. I think one encryptor the information that goes between the powers in the criminal forensics scenario, there's a key master who installs the authentication server and he creates the user account, but he doesn't do any examination. And then he can allow examiners certain permissions, what they can do, where they can go, when they can do it, what they can acquire. So there's a lot of control over what can be done. In principle, I don't know what happens in the video. And so every time a product creator, or our writer, can be connected to the researcher, I'm imagining that the creator will have to be the master and the researcher will have to examine it. And I realize that this is some way in the future, it's not something that's going to be very soon, but I do imagine we'll come back in 10 or 5 years or something like that. Yeah.
Thank you.
And the other thing I've just obtained a portable system for encoding from Garden Software. The idea is that you can allow people who are not heavily trained in computer games to go and acquire something, so they could do a site visit. And it could have already been agreed, you know, you would take emails but nothing else, or you can take these particular files with these names. And these options would be are in the software that goes with it, that governs the way that happens, and sort of create a visit, insert it into the computer, select the option that will allow them to draw the computer and order it, and take it away their smell. The point here was that in a way I feel that the forensic wrongness is unavoidable in the sense that even if you don't use forensic software, you do have to understand what is that's in your collection and what the person is giving you. And some means of doing that it is inevitable, and if you want to assure that you're taking it properly. That's what we want from